What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we'll be discussing neurology. Don't run away yet. I promise you, this will be an engaging discussion on training the eyes and ears to create change in the brain. This type of treatment can be used to treat concussions, traumatic brain injuries, tinnitus or tinnitus, anxiety, depression, and so much more. So with that, let me introduce our special guest. John Borden received his Bachelor of Science degree in Health Sciences and Master of Professional Studies in Physical Therapy from SUNY Upstate Medical University College of Health Professions in Syracuse, New York in 1998. John founded Rochester Physical Therapy Wellness in 2011. The questions that he has been pursuing are how to practically apply the principles of neuroscience in a functional and objective manner, and two, how does trauma affect memory and trauma's impact on the practical neurological processing of information? One great area is concussion, and we'll be talking a lot about concussions today. So with that, I'd like to welcome John on the podcast. What's up, man?
Hey, Matt. Great to be on your podcast. Never done one of these before.
Likewise, you're going to be a natural. I can already tell.
Okay.
you're good at what you do, man. This is going to be fun. So we're going to talk all about concussions, eyes, ears, balancing the brain. I'm really excited about this one. I got my pen and paper handy.
Okay.
So let's start talking about you. Tell us your story. What or who inspired you to get into the health and wellness space?
Well, like most people that get into some type of healthcare, either they were inspired by someone they met or they got hurt themselves. I was in the part that got hurt themselves. I got hurt and there was really no one to guide me. And luckily I ended up with a physician who was a customer of mine who said that I should become a physical therapist. Knowing nothing about becoming a physical therapist, I said, all right, I'll do that. And I was lucky enough to get into SUNY Health Science Center at the time. That's what it was called, because they spent, I think, $8 million in changing their name from SUNY Upstate to SUNY Health Science Center. And then they spent more money to change it back to SUNY Upstate. And I was very blessed to have excellent professors in a wonderful situation. The big part that the mantra that all of my professors used was, if a person comes in and they're an orthopedic patient, they're also a neurological patient, they're also every other type of system in the body, you have to evaluate all 11 systems when you're looking at any patient. And that allowed me to be able to question everything. And The whole concept of solving puzzles was really, something that I've really enjoyed.
So what exactly is your specialty?
I have no specialty. I have an interest. I'm a general physical therapist in private practice, and my interest is in neuroscience and neurophysiology. There's several areas, specialty areas in physical therapy, and they're very rigorously tested, and it's a wonderful thing. I'm more of an interested practitioner or clinician.
I can't wait to dive into your brain today. I'm just looking at the wall behind you, and if anyone's ever been to John's office, you know what I'm talking about, all the sticky notes, and it's a puzzle back there.
Yes,
but you try to guide the path and you help people guide the path, and you provide so much hope for people and you help a lot of people. So let's talk about concussions. So what exactly is a concussion, and what are the typical and not so typical side effects when it comes to concussions?
Well, man, I think the best thing for me to do is read you the CDC definition of concussion, because I find them very helpful in being general enough so people can say, okay, well, this might be something I need to look at. So a concussion is a type of traumatic brain injury caused by a bump, blow, or jolt to the head, or by a hit to the body that causes the head and brain to move rapidly back and forth. This sudden movement can cause the brain to bounce around and twist in the skull, creating chemical changes in the brain and sometimes stretching and damaging brain cells. Medical providers may describe a concussion as a mild brain injury because the concussions are not life-threatening. Even so, these effects of the concussions, it can be very, very serious. So that's the definition.
What is your definition?
My definition is really questioning the patient who comes in, and they might come in with something else, but I'll notice that their eyes don't focus or track well, or they turn their head a lot when they're listening to me. So it kind of leads me to down the road of asking them questions about ever being hit in the head or concussions as a kid or anything like that. And I found it to be very helpful in helping create an environment where they can explore that.
So how would a patient self-diagnose a concussion and or know when to seek medical attention?
Well, there's a number of things that that they can take a look at, or if they feel pressure in their head that's weird. They have nausea or vomiting that can't be explained any other way. Balance problems, running into walls, and walking along and just kind of drifting one way or the other. Blurred vision, noise, being bothered by noise or light that's new. Feeling like they have a hangover for days at a time. Confusion. And the best thing, I think, is if they have someone close to them that notices a change that seems to stay. And I've had a number of patients that have come in that way.
Concussions are scary. I mean, they change your life, and they can last for months or years.
Or decades,
yeah. And I don't know if sometimes you lose your supporting cast then too, because people are getting frustrated. I'm like, dude, I don't know what's going on with you. Like, and then they might think you're making it up or whatever. But I love what you do, and you provide so much hope for people, and you try to dig deeper and get to the root cause, whether it's something structural in the brain or something emotional, some traumas in the past. And we'll dive deeper into that, but these are big and these happen. These are more common than you think, probably.
Oh, I end up with a lot of them. So my patient population probably wouldn't be typical, either with chronic pain or chronic dysfunction. That's the majority of my practice, but I've been inspired by a lot of the books that I've read by different healthcare professionals and different patients who have written about their journeys. And through reading those journeys, I can start to make parallels for my patients and have them read if they can. And a lot of times with brain injuries, reading is like off the table. They can't read, and they may not be able to listen, or they can listen in short spurts because the processing of how the information is coming in is off.
That's a good segue into the eyes and ears. So why are the eyes and ears such an important window to rehabbing the brain?
Well, they're two great big sensory inputs. So if you're blind, you find other ways to use balance. You don't use your eyes to create balance, but you're going to need something that's going to be able to guide you so you don't run into something. Mm-hmm. So people that can see use their eyes for all sorts of things, not just looking. Something that I learned through reading the book, The Ghost in My Brain, I mean, you and I both went to good schools. You and I both learned about the brain and neuroscience. And we both learned about rods and cones when it comes to vision. And we both learned that there's central vision and peripheral vision. Mm-hmm. I never knew that there was a third pathway.
Me neither. Tell me more.
Once I read this, I go, wait a minute. Okay, this is really important. This there's a non-image forming pathway that branches off and processed by other body systems, like postural control. and sleep rhythms, the production of melatonin. These are crucial systems for our daily existence. And if they change their processing or inability to process, or the information doesn't pass through well, you'll get severe changes in people's sleep cycles. You'll get significant postural control problems, like people start rocking and they can't seem to find where they are in space. Mm-hmm. And it's all based off this third non-image forming pathway. Hmm. And I've sent several patients to Chicago, the same doctor that the Ghost of My Brain is built off of. Her name is Debbie Zielinski. She owns the Mind Eye Institute and has done brilliant work. And she's used all kinds of little prisms to bounce light into certain parts of the eyes. She'll use filters and she'll, unbelievable number of things that she can do to help in the process of rehabilitation for a particular patient.
So symptoms may vary patient to patient, but a lot of it is the eyes and ears being out of sync, not being able to find their horizon to properly balance.
Yeah, they'll process differently. Right? You'll see someone turn their head in order to get information to come in hearing. And a lot of times when people are trying to read and they have another source of information like sound coming in, it's like trying to watch a movie, or let's make believe you and I are in a something that everybody in the healthcare profession can sit with, is you're in a neuro lecture, and the professor is speaking, and you can see him speaking, but his words are like a half a second or 2 seconds later, so they don't sync. And you're trying to concentrate on something very important that's going to be, it's very difficult to understand. And yet these are coming in at different times. This is what this person's living with.
So it's kind of like a bunch of garbage in your room. You're trying to put it in the garbage can and it's just filling up around it. It's just a bunch of stimuli coming in, just filling, overwhelming the system. And then they go bonkers with headaches, whatever, dizziness, nausea. Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And, you can imagine how frustrated they are when they go into to get help and the person helping them go, I don't know.
Gotcha. So that's the biggest window, as you would say, balancing out the eyes and ears. And she does that probably through a ton of different methods, but glasses.
It's truly brilliant. And there's a website called the Mind Eye Institute, and anybody interested in concussion at all can glean a lot of information from that website and the research that she's done.
But you're a good starting point probably for a lot of people, especially locally, if they're dealing with concussions.
Well, very interested in it. And it seems, we've been very lucky in how we've been able to treat patients. There's another professional that I've taken a course from that helped me understand exactly, like when you came over to the office and I put some tape on your glasses and then you notice a significant change in your ability to turn your head and go up and down. And his name is Frank Corrigan. He's a psychiatrist out of Scotland who practices a trauma recovery program that he developed called Deep Brain Reorienting. And he does it from a psychological approach, but he goes into great detail in the neuroscience and neuroanatomical perspective of how he got to where he got and how he processes, how he gets people to process information. And from that and from Debbie Zielinski, I started thinking about, okay, if the filters work in this direction, wouldn't they work in order to change what Frank's trying to change? So I could do it as a physical therapist if I don't want to get into the psychiatric portion of the program. But if someone has neck pain and they can't turn their head, and if I can just put some filters on, that's a great way to get them to understand that change can occur quickly.
It's pretty amazing. Thank you for those glasses. I'm using them to weed whack my house now. So thank you.
Perfect.
But you're right. It was immediate and you didn't touch me. You didn't even tweak my head position, my posture at all. It was strictly eyes and vision and immediate difference.
And those were that non-image forming sensor that was actually able to change your postural adaptation very quickly.
It was pretty amazing. That was awesome. So let's talk about emotions here. So how does emotional trauma fit in when dealing with a concussion or traumatic brain injury type symptoms?
Well, it has to do with memory and how memory gets recorded or laid down. Let's say you're in a car accident, and the car accident's bad enough. There's the trauma of the head movement, all these things. And you wake up and you smell gas and you hear sirens. So all that information gets laid down, and this is it happens in milliseconds, and it's a life threat. And I'm using a car accident as a life threat, but if you're a kindergartner and you get screamed at by your kindergarten teacher in front of all the rest of your all the rest of the students, it's no less traumatic. Mm-hmm. And it's no less the memory is laid down in a similar fashion. But pretty soon, with a patient that's experienced that car accident, if they hear a siren, they'll tighten up. If they smell gas, they'll have some of the same body movements that are associated with that particular accident, causing almost a re-traumatization based on a sensory input. Mm. And that's why you'll see some people, they'll have a car accident, I'm fine. And then 3 days later, 5 days later, things start to tighten up based on those memories coming in and doing this. Now, they may have damage, which will heal. But if that message to change their head position quickly or hold their head in this particular direction isn't changed, they're going to be suffering with that for maybe the rest of their life. So finding ways to get that memory to extinguish and coming into the present moment is really what the goal or the direction I like to have people go.
Now, do you discuss diet, sleep, breathing, and other lifestyle changes with patients dealing with cognitive impairments?
Absolutely, I do. But normally, I mean, I'm not an expert in that at all. I mean, I give them a general idea, and I'll refer them out to people. You know, Pam Grover is a great one to mm-hmm. refer to when someone's systems are off internally. She has a wonderful way of helping them in that direction. And that's normally the direction I'll go with that kind of situation.
Yeah, she was on my podcast a while back. She's awesome. Great person, mm-hmm. great practice. I don't think she's taking new patients anymore, but I think she has Dr. Alexa. She's got another doctor there. Yep. Yeah.
And she's fabulous too. I mean, Pam's my friend and she's also my doctor. So I just mm-hmm. say Pam Grover. So
For sure. She runs the show over there. What about nutrition though? Breathing, same kind of thing. It's more, you're going to start with her for a lot of that.
I teach a particular style of breathing. Okay. I've been associated of awareness techniques clinical instructor for quite some time. And one of the exercises that was developed by Scott was reflexercise. And essentially it's a posture and it's a breathing pattern so that all the information that you're sending to your brain when you breathe is one of safety and openness. Mm-hmm. And you can direct a particular message. Like if you close your fist and you tighten your body and you breathe, that's sending a message to your brain that there's potentially danger around. But if you open mm-hmm. your hands and you put your toes down and you turn your head a little bit, you push your tongue up to the roof of your mouth and you start to breathe and you start to get a rhythm to your breath and you start to open things up, there's a lot of physiological changes that will occur. So I try to get people to do that exercise. It's probably one of the most difficult things that I have to give them enough opportunities and chances so that they'll start to put it as part of their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But I found it very beneficial for them.
Now with sleep though, is it a myth that you shouldn't go right to sleep after hitting your head?
It's not a myth. Here's why. If you hit your head hard enough, and you create enough swelling, that swelling can continue to a point where it actually pushes your brain down through the foramen, that's the hole that's in the where your brainstem and spinal cord come together. If it pushes hard enough, it'll just kill you. It'll just push that brainstem down through that foramen, and the next thing you know, your breathing center is being crushed in, then you're dead. So yeah, you kind of want to make sure.
So what do you do? So you hit your head, you're suspecting a concussion. What do you do?
Well, the best thing that I could tell you to do is you got to get somewhere to have someone to evaluate you and actually take a look in your eyes. And one of the ways that they take a look for pressure in the eye is they look in the back of the eye and the optic disc. If you have the right instrument, you can actually see it start to swell. And that's when you kind of got to really be careful and make sure that patient's watched. Mm-hmm. And it might be a night in the hospital. All depends on, and it doesn't have to be a super hard hit to the head. If it's hit just right, you know, all kinds of things can happen.
So they'll keep that patient awake if they're suspecting an issue to the optic disc?
Initially they will, and they'll start to watch and see what they're, see how responsive they are. And if they become so they're really out, they might actually have to drill a hole in the head to let pressure off.
Wow. Now what's the deal with pupils? Will pupils dilate or constrict?
They might. And they might, or they might go the other way, but they'll be abnormal for what they should be.
So that's not very objective though. I mean, you need to look deeper at the optic.
That's just a symptom. You know, it could be of anything, you know, you certainly want to take it down and say, okay, there's something here we might want to take a look at.
For sure. Now, what's your take on intermittent fasting with concussions? I know there's been some research with how it's advantageous for a concussion to eat less, eat within a tighter window.
I really think that intermittent fasting in any case for anybody is probably a really good idea, but especially mm-hmm. in this situation, because it gives the whole system a chance to take a break mm-hmm. and only work for short periods of time. Mm-hmm. Because your autonomic nervous system, your parasympathetic, your sympathetic systems start to run a little bit hog wild. Mm-hmm. And the more that you can create an environment where they can start resync what's supposed to be going on, the better the opportunity is.
So what are a few actionable tips that listeners can apply? You already shared some, but what are a few more to start addressing concussions or TBI type symptoms?
Try not to ignore symptoms that don't get better. That's the biggest thing. I mean, people get hit in head all the time and they do get better without any professional intervention. But also there's a lot of people that are afraid to investigate a concussion based on the fact that it might limit their playing time. It might limit their employability. It might limit a number of things. And the fear or the loss of your identity as an athlete, which has happened several times in several of my patients, because athletes in general are willing to push through and do whatever it has to do, what it takes to be able to get the job done, which is commendable and it's great, except for when there's a big processing problem that's really making, potentially doing some big damage. So one of the things that I said, don't ignore symptoms. Have someone you trust check you out. And it doesn't have to be a healthcare professional. I mean, ask people that you trust, am I doing things well or am I missing something? Am I hearing everything? Am I seeing everything? I've had patients regularly say this after a couple of visits, when'd you put all that stuff on the wall? Because their central focus, their focus is like this. You're almost in you're never in, you know, fight all the time and you're never in flight all the time. But if you're cycling very quickly through fight, flight and freeze, it's very difficult to have any peripheral vision. Mm-hmm. Your focus is center and you'll lose a lot of the big picture.
I was just reading about that, how looking away from our screens and just the landscape really mm-hmm. activates the parasympathetic tone. It helps us to relax more, whether it be a sunset, the horizon, just looking off to a distance. How often do we do that? We rarely do that all day. We're looking at a screen right in front of us, like we're doing right now.
Yeah, and the one thing that, you know, again, this is something I didn't know, I know now, but all peripheral vision is processed through the right side of the brain. And, you know, central vision focus is left side of the brain. And, you know, how things are processed in what side of the brain. Everything's processed on both sides of the brain, but we're more likely to on the right or more likely to on the left based on, you know, what's going on with us or how we were raised or how genetically we're focused and things like that.
So you mentioned a couple books earlier. I think you mentioned The Ghost in My Brain. Who wrote that book?
That was by Clark Elliott. He's a PhD. He was a professor of AI, artificial intelligence, who had a very minor car accident, shook himself up pretty good in 1999. And then it's a story of his journey and how bad it got for him and how he ended up finding his way out of his situation. And it's brilliantly written, and it's for anybody that has any other human that's in their life that's had a concussion. Mm. It's a great book to read. The one that I would suggest people reading that have both physical and emotional trauma, and it's hard to separate the two because of how the information is processed, was written by Dr. Robert Scheer. It's called The Trauma Spectrum, Hidden Wounds and Human Resiliency. He's a Rochester guy. Hmm. He went to undergrad, University of Rochester, medical school, University of Rochester, neurology fellowship, University of Rochester, and promptly moved to Boulder, Colorado back in the 70s. So he got his education here and left us. Yeah. But he has a brilliantly written book that most everybody would enjoy. It gets a little bit heady at times, but he does a good way. He has a great way of explaining it. He calls himself a traumatologist, and I could go along with that.
Well, thanks for sharing those resources. I'm going to dive into that, especially The Ghost of My Brain. I want to check that out. So tell me more about you winning the day. Like, what's a perfect day for you? What's a perfect day for John Borden?
One thing, I'm 62. Just waking up is a great day. So
it's a good start.
Yeah. And then taking the dogs out, getting in the car, putting the top down, coming to work and seeing patients. That's really a great day for me. And anything else is a bonus.
Yeah. I can tell that you love your job and mm-hmm. you love your patients, and that's awesome. You do quality work. So what are you currently reading right now?
I'm currently reading, and I can suggest this to some, I'm reading two things. For pleasure reading, I'm reading The Genius by Jesse Kellerman. It's really, really good. But professionally, let me just pull it up so I don't screw it up. The Secret Language of Cells by Dr. John Leaf. It's unbelievably good. Okay. We've been here at this, we call it the lab. We've been taking a really close look at how cells function and how memory is laid down and how humans are somewhere between 30 and 70 trillion cells as an organism. But each one of those cells has the ability to have its own memory. Much like the paramecium that we both went to school, studied single-celled organisms. Mm-hmm. And a paramecium can remember, it can learn, and it can make decisions without a brain and without mm-hmm. a nervous system. Mm-hmm. So if that's true, it's true for every cell in our body. And so if every cell in our body has the potential of memory, this body-mind continuum that people sometimes scoff at and sometimes, that doesn't really make sense. When you take a look at a bunch of cells in an organ or a bunch of cells as a mm-hmm. entity, which is a human or a dog, it starts to make sense because the type of memory that a cell would have, the cell wall would have, would be more like an analog style of memory. The memory that's inside the DNA of the nucleus of the cell is more of a digital memory. Mm. So those two memories are existing within a single cell. Then you start to take that up into the brain and the nervous system, and you go, then things get complicated, but they're beautiful, but it's a lot of thinking. And you start to take a look at the cell processes and how they work and what changes them. Oh, it's just, it's fascinating, but it, you know, this Dr. Leaf has, I think he said like 8 or 9 years, he started taking all the different forms of science that looks at cells, and he essentially took all the language there, because there's different languages, like your school of chiropractic had a different language for mm-hmm. some of the same things that my school of philosophy does for physical therapy. It's the same darn stuff, mm-hmm. but the language is different. So he took all the languages and he boiled it down so people can understand it. And it's just brilliant. It's brilliant stuff.
I feel like the question should have been, what book are you writing? I could see you writing a phenomenal book.
One of my partners, Spencer Blackman, who's way smarter than me, is writing a book.
Well, you're next, man. You should definitely write something. Okay. I could see you being an author.
Thank you much for that vote of confidence, but
we'll see. Yeah, there's a lot of sedentary behavior doing that. Right. So let's talk about your business. How can listeners get more information on your business, connect with you online, and or make an appointment?
Well, we have a website, which is old and cranky, and I don't know how to change it. So it's the same. It's called RochesterPTWellness.com. We have a phone number of 585-872-9669. And we're in Webster, New York at Cross Point Lane, Suite 3. It's 1150. So that's where we are. It's easy to get to. And we have 3 or 4, depending upon the day, practitioners that are all trained in AAT. Something I didn't mention, which is BMRT, which is Blomberg Rhythmic Movement Technique, which takes a real close look at primitive reflexes, which will kind of poke their heads back up after a traumatic incident, a traumatic brain injury, or any type of trauma. It's almost a shortcut that the nervous system will take to produce a posture to try to save you from things. But it's very hard to get out of if you can't. It's a very difficult postural problem that evolves out of this. So it's one of the ways that we can get at moving things and allowing them to start to resolve.
Yeah, you got a really cool practice. And like you said, you got 3 or 4 practitioners there. Mm-hmm. You guys are spending quality time with patients. You're just doing really good work. So you got my vote of confidence for any listener looking to get in with concussion type stuff. Or what else do you treat? Anything else?
I treat a lot of chronic conditions. What used to be called RSD, complex regional pain syndrome, which nobody wants to treat. So we have a number of patients with different kinds of neurological conditions. MS, I've been seeing a number of those cases. And for the most part, I get referrals from other practitioners that they may, you know, they just said, well, go over and see him and see what happens.
Enough said. That's it.
And that's essentially what we get.
Love it. Well, I'm curious about your response to this. So final question, if you have a friend coming to Rochester who has never been here, where would you take them?
Well, I'm a hometown boy. I live in Fairhaven, New York. Of course, I'd take him out there first. But in Rochester, I would take him on an East Avenue cruise, head to the river, and then go up and down the river and see what it's like. The river is gorgeous. There's many parks in the area. There's a lot of great places to eat. And then depending on what they wanted, you can find anything in this city. This is a fabulous city for arts, music, any number of things. One of the things that people never mention, though, is the state parks that are around the area, and they're gorgeous.
Yes. Especially this time of the year with the leaves changing soon. Yeah.
Many times I have patients coming in from different parts of the country sometimes, and they normally say, you know, that you're in New York. Yeah. Yeah. And they get here, they go, whoa. Oh, this is different. I said, yes, this is the beautiful part of New York. So it's always great to take in all around the upstate New York area. But Rochester is just a very cool city, and you can find anything you want here.
Great answer, man. Yep. Scenery, good food, good drink, good music, mm-hmm. all that stuff. Well, John, thank you for your time today. Thank you for what you're doing for Rochester and Webster specifically. You're helping a lot of people and giving people a lot of hope. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Matt, for having me on.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you gained a lot of value from what John shared with us today, and we'll share this with family and friends. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can join me next time with a new local guest in the health and wellness space. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I'll talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me. Go to my website, DriscollChiropracticNY.com. Read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me, info@DriscollChiropracticNY.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram, @DR.Driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.